Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? We make getting custom window treatments a minor project with major impact. Choose from premium blinds, shades, and shutters. We even have options for your patio, too. Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Our design experts can help you find the perfect window treatments on your schedule. We'll even send free samples directly to you. Plus, we can handle the measuring and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for just one low cost. And with Blinds.com, you'll always get transparent pricing. No hidden fees. Our free shipping and 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step. And into your home, too. Shop Blinds.com right now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off for a limited time at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Herbie, let's go.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
Can you dig it? Can you dig it? Can you dig it?
It's hour two of the program. I am Lawrence Holmes here with you until 2 o'clock. Herbie was talking with D.B. Sweeney. I guess he was, like, parking. So he's going to join us in a few minutes, which is great because I actually do have a couple other things I wanted to get to today, including the White Sox. It's Aloy Day. So wait, what's today's date? 7/26? Like, will 7/26 will be Aloy Day forever? Hopefully he's in the lineup as the DH tonight against Kansas City. I suspect that we'll get a lineup during the Parkinson Spiegel show. Like maybe during transition, we'll get a lineup to see what they're going to do. Usually the road lineups come out before the home ones. Anyway, we'll see where Aloy is, where he's batting. Tony said that he's going to be in the lineup, so hopefully it is as a DH. I also wanted to spend a couple of minutes, if I could. My body clock went off. Like, this happens. Like, I covered the Bears for a really long time. So usually when we get to the middle of July, like, my body clock goes off. And I'm, like, ready for football. And the great thing is the White Sox are going to keep our attention for a big portion of these next few months. But Bears football is coming back, starting tomorrow. We've got stuff in place, by the way. I'm looking forward to some of the different segments that we are going to do, including tomorrow. My buddy Michael Felder is going to be on the show. He breaks down tape like a crazy person on college players. He is going to give you the scouting report on Justin Fields tomorrow. Like, we're going to just really just jump right into the deep end talking about the Bears. Over the weekend, the Bears made a trade. Air quotes, trade, sent Anthony Miller on to Houston. Like, we kind of all knew that his days were numbered as a Bear because you can't, like, if you were looking for a differentiation between the two guys, if you're like, well, wait, Javon Wims punched that same dude in the face and snatched his chain and all that stuff. Why didn't they cut him? Well, the first guy gets the benefit of the doubt. The first guy gets to say, I got overly emotional. I flipped out. I take my punishment, that two games, and I'm sorry. When it happens, and it happens on your team, like, you already have the film around the league is one thing with him. But you had video from a few weeks ago of one of your teammates letting that guy get under his skin, losing his bleep, and then getting chain snatched and doing all the weird stuff that Javon Wims was doing. Also, you have the added weight of you did it in a playoff game. You got ejected in a playoff game. And here's how I know it was bad. And this, again, this falls back on my career as a Bears beat reporter. You know it was bad because the coaches told you how much they had reminded the players throughout the week. Mike Fury, Matt Nagy, they couldn't run to a microphone fast enough to be like, hey, we told these dudes that this guy was going to do this thing. CJ Gardner, is that his name? That this guy is going to do this thing and that you have to be prepared for it. And there was all of this stuff where you had the tape of Javon Wims losing his bleep and then snatching chains and mouth guards and all that other stuff. You can't have it. It's really disappointing because I feel in my bones that Anthony Miller has legitimate high three, low two wide receiver in him at his best. The problem was is that he didn't show you that enough. And then when you add in that maybe he was feeling himself after his rookie season, and you hear this from people that he was maybe not taking the craft of wide receiving as seriously as he could have, then you get kind of a jumbled early start to his career. I think he has enough talent that Bears fans might regret him moving on. But this is, I'm not saying that the Bears should not have done this. They 100% should have done this. But I also think that he's got enough talent that 3 years from now, you could be like, man, I remember when he was a Bear. And now he's catching 50 balls a year or whatever it is. What it does bring up for me, as we start to really look at position groups and training camp is on the way and all, I'm wearing my QB1 shirt right now. If you're on Twitch, twitch.tv/Chicago670, The Score. That position group to me is a little weak. It's not sound the alarm weak because Allen Robinson plays there. So you know that you have a guy that you can 100%, you know, get the ball to when you need to get him the ball. But when I start looking at it, I go, wow, there are some things that are missing from this entire situation. I know that they added Marquise Goodwin to the crew, and that's speed, and he gets to take the top off of defense and all that good stuff, but I think that they have some issues. So it's one of the position groups that I'm looking at. Oh my God, DB Sweeney is here. Herbie, he knows how to do this. Like, this is what he does. He's doing voiceover work all the time now.
Good to have an expert on the mic, though.
It is. If you want, you can move your chair. I usually sit down when I interview people. Oh, so okay. If you want to match me and be comfortable, I'm so happy that you're here, man. I thank you so much for coming to hang out.
Thank you. It's exciting for me. I'm a fan of the show. I'm a fan of yours.
Thank you. That's
your
very
dulcet
nice of you
tones.
To say.
You've got a great voice.
Well, before we get into everything, I do want to ask you about doing voiceover work now. And all the stuff that, whether you're doing characters, you're doing stuff for the OWN network, how does one get tapped on the shoulder by Oprah to come and do voiceover work?
You know, it was a really great honor. Like, when she started the network, she obviously could have her pick of anybody in the business. And I guess it came down to me and a couple of females. And she was like, you know what, we kind of have a women's network and we don't want to sound too female. So let's go with DB. And I guess it was a real competitive process that I had to submit a bunch of samples. And I was very honored because I'm a fan of Miss Oprah, too. And it was great to, you know, to be living here in Chicago and being the voice of OWN.
Chicago, you're really from New York, right?
I am from New York. But, you know, I used to come here a lot during the golden age of, you know, when MJ was destroying everybody. And Chris Chelios, my buddy, was a captain of the Blackhawks. And I come visit a lot. And it was always my favorite place to go. So I just thought when my kids were about to be teenagers and I was like, I want to live in Chicago.
I saw you give tips on breaking your accent that I had never seen before in working with this. So I don't mind if I wouldn't mind if you would share the pencil in the mouth thing.
Well, you know, I met a casting director real early on in New York, and I came from Long Island, And I sounded like, for fans of Entourage, I sounded like E. I was like, yo, let's get some coffee. You know, I need my cup of coffee right now. And so this guy, this casting director said to me, you don't look like you're from New York, so you can't sound like you're from New York. And I really didn't know what he meant until 20 years later when I saw The Sopranos. He was saying, you're not going to get hired to be on The Sopranos. You're going to get hired as a guy from Winnipeg or a guy from Iowa, you know, that you don't look like that idea of what everybody thinks a New Yorker is, like that Guido thing. So I understood it late, but at the time I took the advice, even though I didn't understand it. And so he recommended that you put, not him, a voice coach that I worked with recommended that you take a pencil and you put it in your teeth and you try to speak as clearly as you can and as articulately as you can. And you start to learn what you sound like to the rest of the world. And then you take the pencil out and then you try to do like a strong accent from where you're from. And then another accent from like England or something with the pencil and without the pencil. And, you know, I felt like I should mix business with pleasure. So I changed the pencil to a wine cork. And of course you had to liberate the wine cork. So it became it became more of a fun activity.
Yeah. So how, when it comes to you like training your voice, like how much time do you spend doing that? Or have you done all of those things and now it's just give me the script and I can rip and read?
Well, a lot of times they want you to sort of not be a character where you have an accent. If there is an accent call for, I'll spend as much time as I need to really get it down. Like a few years ago, I did Under Milkwood, which is famous for Richard Burton. It's a Welsh play, and I had to sound like a Welshman. So that was a lot of work. That's a really hard accent. And but generally speaking, at the time, I just wanted to get rid of this Long Island accent. So I spent about an hour and a half to 2 hours a day, you know, not all of it in front of the mirror. Sometimes I was driving a taxi for a lot of that time. So I'd be looking in the rearview mirror trying to look at the parts of my mouth moving and trying to understand how I could sound less like, you know, a guy from Rockville Center.
So you've made this your home. Why did you decide to make this your home?
I love the people in the Midwest, and like I said, when I used to come back here, it was a great period of time in Chicago in the 90s, and I made so many friends here, and I just thought, you know, I was always New Yorker at heart, and L.A. was not a good fit for me. You know, I have friends out there as well, but, you know, I said to my wife, let's move back east, and I was kind of saying New York. She was like, we already did New York. Let's try Chicago, because she'd always heard me talk about it so much, and she'd had good experiences here as well.
D.B. Sweeney joining me here in studio. We got to talk a lot about his career and the great roles that he's played. One of the reasons why I wanted to have you on is we're getting close to the Field of Dreams game between the White Sox and the Yankees. And people obviously know that you played Shoeless Joe Jackson in 8 Men Out. It's one of my favorite movies of all time. How do you feel about this kind of more storytelling about Shoeless Joe, you know, through the movie itself, but also now with this game and the type of spotlight that it's going to put on Joe's career?
It's such a great story. And, you know, I guess half the problem with becoming a legend is you got to have a great nickname. And so, you know, Shoeless Joe is like, even if you don't know the story of why he's called that, or, you know, it's just such an iconic figure. And I'm really excited and proud to be associated with that. And, you know, people have different opinions about whether he should be in the Hall of Fame or not. And I think it's become more and more difficult to keep him and Pete Rose and others like Roger Clemens out of the Hall of Fame because, you know, nobody's really 100% pure. And there are guys in the Hall of Fame, obviously, who are role models and great characters. But I think that it really should be about your achievements as an athlete. And, you know, so I think it gets harder and harder to keep Shoeless Joe out of the Hall of Fame.
I know we're going 35 years back on this, but when you were prepping for that role, what did you do? How did you get yourself ready for it?
Well, I thought it was really important at that time. This is before Kevin Costner, who did such a great job playing a minor league catcher in Bull Durham. Nobody had ever really effectively, in my opinion, as a former baseball player, played a baseball player believably in a movie. The great Robert De Niro in Bang the Drum Slowly is laughable. Michael Moriarty, another great actor, terrible. You know, so it was a whole history. And Gary Cooper, one of my favorite actors in Pride of the Yankees, was terrible. So I thought there was a real opportunity to be an actor from a baseball background to really knock it out of the park. And then John Sayles, but I wasn't a left-handed hitter. So I said to John Sayles, the director, can we do it like they did in Pride of the Yankees, where they reversed art directed everything, and then he hit righty and ran to third, and they flipped the negative and made it look like a lefty. Obviously, a lot more expenses doing that. He said, we don't have the money for that. 8 Men Out was kind of a lower budget movie. So he said, you have 6 months, you know, just do the best you can. So I was like, okay, that makes me a professional baseball player. So I'm going to go and learn to hit lefty. So I played for a little while with the San Francisco Giants rookie team in California. They let me work out and play with them. And then I thought to experience what Joe Jackson would have experienced in 1919 and in his career when players were, there were no trainers, they were on buses and trains, and you know, it was very unglamorous compared to today. I thought that sounds like A-ball. So I spent a summer with the Kenosha Twins just up the road from here. And just had one of the greatest summers of my life and, you know, played with them. I wasn't able to play in games except for one at-bat. And but every day I took batting practice and lived the life of a minor league baseball player.
I was going to ask you about Ray Liotta. When you talk about, you know, it not looking good on screen, where you're sitting there with Ray Liotta because he's an amazing actor. And you're going, Shoeless Joe wasn't right-handed, Ray. So how do you feel knowing that you've both played the same character, but you actually went and became a baseball player and Ray didn't?
Well, I mean, Ray's a great actor, and I know Ray. I'm really fond of Ray, and, you know, Goodfellas speaks for itself. And, you know, I think there's times I've had jobs where I get slammed in there on a Friday night, and you got to just make the best of it. And there's times like 8 Men Out where you have 6 months. So, I mean, I don't know what Ray's situation was, and I think he's really good in the movie. And, you know, I'm flattered when people say that, you know, I had the more believable baseball playing Shoeless Joe Jackson. That's awesome, but... You know, I don't really feel like any rivalry with Ray because, you know, man, I wish I was in Goodfellas.
And what other, like, when you start to look, and I'm going to get back to 8 Men Out because I have a couple more questions for you on that. And we're talking with D.B. Sweeney here on The Score. What movies that you were close on? Were you like, man, maybe you passed on it or they said you weren't right and you were like, I really wish I was in that movie?
Well, when my kids were little, I really regretted that I didn't do to play the part opposite Joe Pesci in Home Alone. They had asked me to do that. And obviously, Daniel Stern was phenomenal. I just didn't get the movie. I thought, you know, it's a little silly. And, you know, Macaulay Culkin kind of makes that whole thing explode. And it's great. And John Hughes is great. And so I certainly regret that around Christmas time when that thing comes on TV.
I bet. I bet. What movie are you proudest of? Like the work that you did, the commitment to it, or even television appearances. What makes you proud when you see it pop back up?
Well, that was a part of my career where right around 8 Men Out, after that I did Lonesome Dove, and I didn't know how to ride a horse. So learning how to ride a horse, not just believably, but to become very skilled at it, I'm really proud of the way that turned out. And I think Robert Duvall is the greatest American actor, and so to be alongside him in that show is really a source of great pride for me. It's one of the great scripts by Larry McMurtry and Tommy Lee Jones. I mean, it's just, you go on and on. That cast is Danny Glover, some of our greatest actors all doing this iconic Western. That was great. But The Cutting Edge, I think, is the one I'm most proud of because it was very difficult to shoot figure skating. And, you know, even if you had great hockey players and figure skaters, which Moira Kelly and I were not, it's hard to get the camera up close because we're used to watching figure skating on TV. It's kind of a full body shot and it's wide and it's, you know, it's graceful and elegant. But when you're doing a movie, you want to hear what people are saying to each other under their breath while they're doing that. And so just to get the camera close enough and have us believably moving was an incredible challenge. And I'm very proud of the movie, of the way it's aged. And the script by Tony Gilroy is phenomenal. And, you know, so I guess those three, 8 Men Out, Lonesome Dove, and The Cutting Edge are my three that I'm proudest of.
I know that you play hockey, but had you skated before The Cutting Edge?
No, it sounds like a broken record that I had to learn these skills 3 movies in a row, but it's true. They knew I was athletic, and they were sort of like, they were going to use a lot of stunt doubles, and they hadn't really figured out exactly how they were going to do it. But Moira and I, neither of us skated. We're both from Long Island, and at that time I was living in New York City. And they rented out a whole rink that was dedicated to Moira and I learning to skate. They had ballet teachers. They had figure skating instructors. They had hockey instructors. And it was like this crash course hockey school for 3 months for me and, to a certain extent, figure skating. And Moira was doing figure skating. So she and I had this incredible immersive rehearsal experience that allowed us to really experience what these characters would have done growing up, crammed into 3 months. And it just paid off such dividends when we got on the set because we had this history together that, you know, you could just turn on the camera and we look at each other and it's like, oh, that's they've been competing to get to be the better skater, even though we're both terrible skaters still at the first month. We're competing to be better than the other one. And that was the whole essence of the movie.
Do people still yell toe pick at you?
If I trip in an airport, I'll hear 5 people yell it. I mean, I think I can make 90 more movies. It's going to say toe pick on my gravestone. I mean, there's no getting around at this point.
That movie, I mean, we're coming up on the 30th anniversary of that movie. Why do you think it touched a nerve with people? Like, that's a lot. Like, I know people who have that movie on VHS and disc. Like, it's a lot of people's favorite flick. Why do you think it reached people?
Well, it starts with Tony Gilroy, the writer who went on to write the Bourne Identity movies. He's one of the great writers in Hollywood now. Everybody agrees on that. But this was his first script, and he put a lot of himself into it. I think there's also the romantic comedy thing. Everybody loves to revisit those. And there's a, you know, a dog and cat vibe to every romantic comedy from Taming the Shrew on down. And the idea of applying that model with a hockey player who's sort of like this gruff physical person and the figure skater for the feminine, it's very classically structured in a sense. And they made a lot of really good choices about it. And there's no profanity. There's very little profanity. There's very little. There's no violence. There's very little about it that would make you uncomfortable on a sexual level. Like you could watch it with your grandmother, or, you know, it really appeals to all ages. The way movies used to all the time do, and now I feel like movies are very much balkanized. Like, here's a movie for teenagers. Here's a movie for people over 50 that vote for Academy Awards. Here's a movie, you know, for this audience or that audience. And I feel like that's unfortunate, because when you find that one movie, whether it's A Wonderful Life, and I'm not comparing the cutting edge, It's A Wonderful Life, but it's the same way where everybody can watch it all the time and have repeat viewings. I think that's given it the longevity it's got.
With Moira, was the chemistry immediate, or was that stuff that you guys had to work through as actors?
For me, it clicked in on about the sixth day, because figure skates are extremely uncomfortable. They're very tight. They got that stupid toe pick on the front. You're always falling down. It's just like in the movie. And it's a pain in the neck. And hockey skates, they get molded to your feet. They're a little more comfortable because they're more built to protect you from pucks than to give you the absolute perfect contact with the ice the way a figure skate is. So even though, as I said, MGM rented out this entire rink, it was ours. And when Moira and I went on the ice, it was she and I and the figure skating instructor. It was usually Evelyn Kramer. And they had rules at the rink where you weren't allowed to have hockey skates on the ice during figure skating hours, and vice versa. Like, somebody made that rule because there's a rivalry between hockey skaters and figure skaters, because the figure skaters land these jumps and take divots out of the ice that pisses off the hockey players. And just the figure skaters want their own time with no hockey players. So there was a sign at the rink that said that exactly that, no hockey skates during figure skating hours. But we had already rented out the whole building. It was our building. So Moira was like, you can't have hockey skates on now because it's 9:15. And I was like, it's our barn. And she was like, but that's not the rule. And I was like, I'm leaving them on. And that's the essence of the movie, that I would just leave the skates on just to piss her off. And then she'll find a way to piss me off. Like, whatever, stick a broken piece of a pretzel with mustard in my street shoes. And I come home to that because I left my hockey skates on. It's like, thank you very much. And so it just became this very organic, you know, one-upsmanship that we competed right through the rehearsals and right through the movie. And I think it really is part of the movie.
Let me go back to 8 Men Out, but before I get you out of here, and I appreciate you coming down, by the way. I know that you listen, but I appreciate that you actually came down to the studio. That cast, like, when you go back and look at the cast of 8 Men Out, you guys must have had a blast on that set.
We really did. It was in Indianapolis we were filming it, because they couldn't find a stadium, even at that point in the late 80s, that looked anything like stadiums looked in the 1910s. So Busch Stadium in Indianapolis was a AAA team at that time for the Montreal Expos, and they hadn't redone the stadium. So it actually looked a lot like those stadiums would have looked architecturally, and it was the best fit. So, but anyway, that meant that we were staying in some really crappy hotel that I think it used to be actually government-subsidized housing that they converted to a hotel right before we got there. So it was really beat up. And the effect of that was that we were all marooned in this crappy hotel together. So the card games we had were just epic. Like, you know, it'd be like they'd go all night, and then it'd be like Charlie Sheen would be like, oh, geez, I've got a scene. Deeb, take my seat. I'm gonna run out. I got to do 3 lines of dialogue. I'll be right back. And it literally went on like that for 10 weeks, this endless card game. Everybody had dinner together every night in the hotel. And they used to show dailies, you know, the footage from the day before every night. And it became a thing where any other movie I was on never had this happen, where the entire cast and crew would assemble in this screening room of the hotel and watch what we shot the day before. And, you know, it was just great. It was very a great bonding for the whole group. And everybody was really proud of what we were filming. And so, you know, we really did have a good time every minute on that movie.
Telling the story of the 1919 White Sox for someone who's clearly a sports fan like you are. And I know that Charlie's huge sports fan, and Cusack's from here. So you have all these elements playing in. When you look at it now, like in its totality, when you compare it with the book and what you guys are able to put on film and having John Sayles be there and be Ring Lardner in the movie, what do you think is the what should be taken away from the 1919 White Sox story?
Well, I think, you know, sports belongs to the fans. And I think even today there could be more pushback from our fans. Like, this is a the greatest sports town in America, in my opinion. It's the greatest town in many ways, greatest food town. There's a whole lot of reasons why Chicago's the best. But sports is, to me, indisputable, which is hard for a New Yorker to say. And the reason I would say that is you talk to a Bears fan, and it is, I think when you get right down to it, the Cubs have had success, the Blackhawks have had success, the Whitehawks, this is a Bears town. I mean, when you get right down to it, I mean, that's in the DNA of the town. And when you talk to people about Bears football, it means so much to them. And it's not like talking about, like in New York, you're a Yankee fan, you're a Met fan, yeah, so what? Here, you're a Cubs fan or you're a Sox fan, and it can be a problem, you know, if you're on the wrong side of that. So I just love the passion that people have. And, you know, I look at, you know, some of the ways sports has become such a business. I would love to see the fans get together and say to the White Sox, to the Cubs, to the Blackhawks, you know what? On Tuesday nights, we're not paying $12 for beers. It's $7. Take it or leave it. And then figure out a way to not go. One game. And just so the fans could have a little bit more of a voice, because a lot of the people that really built these things, like not back as far as 1919, but the people who built the Cub Blue, the, you know, the Blackhawks, to have the Indian head on, you know, it's the people that built the value of these brands, a lot of them are being priced out. And I think that it would be great for some of those people to find a voice. You have social media and just say, you know what? And there are some deals you can get, but I went to a Kane County Cougars game the other night, and it was like, you know, it was a reasonable, all the prices were reasonable, and you saw a lot more families. And I just thought that's what, when I first went to, you know, Yankee games and Met games in New York, that's more what it was like. But you go to a sporting event now, and it's very, very corporate. And you know, you don't see a lot of families of four kids, because who could afford that?
How many takes did it take to get the Say It Ain't So scene done?
It was very quick, a couple takes. That never happened. So that was one of the only arguments I had with John Sales, was like, that really never happened. So let's find a way. The true story of what happened that was inspired by, that a sports writer spun into that story, was Charlie Sheen's character, Hap Velsh, and Shoeless Joe Jackson. The White Sox played the next season. They were getting ready to throw the next World Series. So they weren't as innocent, obviously, as they're portrayed in the movie. They threw the World Series, and they were going to throw it again in 1920. And Shoeless Joe Jackson was hitting .390 in August. And at that point, it was starting to come out in the media that these guys did what they did the year before. But the fans were behind them, and they were saying no. So on one of the games, the players would sometimes not dress at the hotel. They would not dress at the ballpark. They dress at the hotel. So Joe Jackson and Hap Velsh are walking away from the ballpark in their uniforms, and there's 30 kids behind them yelling messages of support like, it didn't happen. We know it didn't happen, Joe. You got to tell them it didn't happen. And some other kid may or may not have said, say it ain't so, Joe. But it was this band of urchins following the ball players out of the ballpark, which to me is such a better scene than the, but John Sales was in a bind, because everybody thinks that moment happened, and it's the iconic memory of, but it was a little too sweet and cloying for me the way it was in the movie. I like the other one that's rough and tumble. We see Hap Velsh's face and Joe Jackson's face, and on their face, the kids are all saying, we know it didn't happen. And on their faces, you know, it happened. We're dirtbags.
When I look at your career, I see evolution. I see it. And you look up D.B. Sweeney and you look at all the different things that you've done in your career. I go, this is a guy who didn't just stay in one lane. How important was it to you to diversify as a performer, as a creative?
Well, very early on, I felt like I wanted to prove that I could do more than one thing. And so I definitely went out of my way to find roles that were, you know, divergent from the last thing I had done. And a lot of them, and I love sports, so a lot of them ended up where I did different sports movies. Like, we did Heaven is a Playground here in Chicago. And
you versus Akeem, right?
Yeah, yeah. We were trying to figure out. I mean, what a great man, by the way. What a great man. And I had so much fun being around. He was only there for a couple of days. We had a few dinners together. And, you know, and it was during Ramadan. And it was amazing, because he said, I didn't know much about Ramadan. And he said, yeah, let's have dinner, but it has to be, it was very late at night. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess he's clubbing it or something. I don't know. It was like, but it was a religious observance that he would not eat until after a certain time. And he was just a fascinating guy. You know, he was a soccer goalie who never played basketball till he was like 11th grade in high school. And then he became Akeem. And the answer to one of the greatest sports trivia questions of all time, like, name the two guys drafted ahead of MJ. And most people get him, and they don't get the other one. So you got it, though, right?
Yeah. I mean, because you end up having to have that conversation with people, and it's just like, you feel really bad, because it's like, at least Akeem got championships.
Yeah. You know?
But wait, I want to go back to the diversification thing. Like, why was that such an important part of what you wanted your career to be. To be like, you know what? I'm okay doing television. I'm okay doing animated. I'm okay doing voiceover stuff. Like that. That I love that you're doing that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I remember early on, I was about 25 or 26 years old when I first started popping in the movies, and they always try to position me as like this cute boy, like, or whatever. And I was like, you know, like, and I thought, man, my sister's had like that David Cassidy poster on. I don't want to be that crap. You know, I'm sure he's a great guy, by the way. I don't know anything about him, but I thought I want to be able to do this for 25 or 30 years. And then when I'm 50, I can be Gene Hackman. You know, that's kind of the way, or Robert Ryan, or, you know, those guys that I really admired. So I felt like I don't want to, you know, just be like a product that they plug into the next teeny bopper thing. I want to show that I can do a lot of different characters and have a longevity. And, you know, I guess that was a pure notion, but it was not really the best career thought. I mean, because, you know, they slam you into a Matrix or something like that. Then you get to do all the movies you want to do. Not that I was up for the Matrix or anything. I'm just pulled that out of the air.
I mean, Spawn.
Yeah, Spawn was great. I mean, I really enjoyed that. And one of my three movies with Martin Sheen, who's a, you know, wonderful guy. And, you know, that was a really good experience. Michael Jai White is a, you know, I mean,
he's a force, man.
He's like, I mean, of all the people in combat movies today, he's probably the most legit. And I know that's a big statement, but I mean, he's, when you stand next to that guy, you're like, you know, you realize he could take you apart in about 4 seconds. And he just puts a lot of effort into it. Like I mentioned Keanu earlier. Keanu has become the go-to weapons guy in movies, and that's not an accident. Like, he's worked his butt off, you know, learning to do speed reloads. And so when you watch those John Wick movies, he's so proficient with weapons. And Michael Jai has that in combat, you know, that he's such a proficient guy in so many disciplines, and he's such a specimen that when he gets into a fight in a movie, it's like, that's what it would be like. And I think I think he should be a bigger star than he is. But, you know, there's time left on the clock.
DB, I really appreciate you coming down here and being a part of the show today. This was awesome. I'm glad I get to talk to the guy that embodied Shoeless Joe Jackson.
Well, thank you. If you don't mind, I just wanted to throw out to any Chicago actors that are listening. I'm running for SAG National Board, the Chicago seat, because I feel like Chicago doesn't get enough of a voice at the table. And I've never done anything for my union, and my union's been really good to me. Residual checks have come in bad months. And I know a lot of actors in this town that, you know, they don't always get the long end of the stick. And I just feel like I want to put in a little time. I'm not becoming a politician. I'll probably be 2 and done or 4 and done, but I want to speak up for the Chicago actors. So if anybody's going to vote for, the national board in the next coming week, I hope you'd consider throwing my name in there.
Vote for D.V. Sweeney. I actually have a SAG card.
Nice. Well, I hope I won one vote here today.
You won one vote.
All right.
100%.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much for your time. Thanks for giving us a lot of great entertainment over the lifetime of your career. And I appreciate you coming in and being in studio with me.
Thank you. I'd love to do it again sometime. I really am a fan of the show.
I think that we can make that happen for sure. That is DB Sweeney. We need to take a break, but I feel like it was totally worth it to be late. Back after this on The Score.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period
at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Oh, it's such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
I don't know if the folks on Twitch got to see it, but I was taking a picture of DB and Rick Camp out in the hallway. And then DB was like, why didn't we take a picture together? So he ran back in here and took a picture with me. We'll see if I'll ask him on, and we'll get it, and we'll put it up for the people on Twitch. Herbie, do I have this right? Do I have Mark Grody walking past DB Sweeney and not realizing it was DB Sweeney?
Correct.
I don't know if there's anyone here who would have appreciated it more that DB Sweeney was in the hallway than Mark Grody. I think Layla got to talk to him because she was still here doing stuff. But I feel like he's the one person would have been like, he would have been able to rattle off, you know, Hardball, Spawn, Toe Pick, like all of that stuff. I'm talking. Do you know that DB has that in his Twitter handle? Wait, I'm pretty sure I'm right. If you follow real DB Sweeney, it literally says, yep, Toe Pick in his Twitter profile. So shout out to him for coming through. We need to take a break because, you know, the interview went really long, but I think it was good, and I'm glad that people reacted to it the way that I was expecting. When we come back, I want to spend a couple minutes talking about Hawk Harrelson and the Hall of Fame. We'll do that next here on The Score.
Lawrence Holmes live from Chicago, middays noon to 2 on Sports Radio 670 The Score and Odyssey Station.
So it's official. Aloy Jimenez has been added back to the active 26-man roster for the White Sox. He has been reinstated off the 60-day injured list. Jake Berger was optioned back to Charlotte. Jake Berger did a nice job while he was here. We'll see where Aloy is in the lineup. Before I go, I wanted to talk about Hawk Harrelson and how happy I am that Hawk got an opportunity to get to his induction. Not that there's nothing wrong with Hawk. I'm not trying to ring any alarms. It's just that he had waited so long to win the Ford C. Frick Award. And then the pandemic doesn't allow for there to be an induction of Hawk Harrelson last year. So you're like, man, he's got to wait. After waiting all this time, he has to wait another year. It ended up being worth it. I enjoyed the things that he was saying about Darren Jackson and Bob Grimm in his speech to go in, and he threw in, I'm sure Tanny is going to have a blast with the Hawk Harrelson induction speech into the Hall of Fame, but that guy has been inside our heads as White Sox fans for a really long time. Like, Hawk Harrelson until 2018 was the sound of summer on the South Side. And whatever you think of his homerism, which he wears like a badge of honor, and he should, know that from here on out, there's a group of White Sox fans that are always going to be saying his catchphrases, and it doesn't even matter if a baseball game is playing. I said this last year when it was announced, and I'll say it again. Congratulations to Hawk Harrelson for making it into the Hall of Fame, the voice of summer for every one of us Sox fans. I'll talk with the Parkinson Spiegel Show next here on The Score.
Oh, such a clutch pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
He shoots. He scores.
Go to Blinds.com for up to 45% off and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Go right now for up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.